and welcome to Alzheimer's Speaks Radio. I'm your host, Lori LeBay, and I'm so excited that you're joining us today. We are going to have a fascinating conversation, as usual, as we learn from people all around the world at all ages and stages of life. Stay tuned as we shift our dementia care from crisis to comfort.
Here we go. What you think about?
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to Alzheimer Speaks. Today, we are going to do an open mic, so I hope you can join us today. On open mics, everyone is welcome. We just ask that we have a respectful conversation, and basically, we can have people with dementia, families, businesses, authors, writers, singers, songwriters, advocates, researchers, you name it. We want to hear from you. We want to hear your lived experiences. We want to hear your theories. We want to hear how you're making a difference and what are the needs. So again, anything dementia and caregiving related to that is welcome. So I never have any idea who is going to show up. So it's always exciting for me to have these conversations, and I hope you enjoy them too. Before we go live, I just want to remind everyone to check out alzheimerspeaks.com. That's where we have tons of free educational resources and so much more there. You can also access our book, Betty the Bald Chicken. And I just want to give a shout out to Arthur's Memory Cafe, which meets virtually the second and fourth Wednesday of each month. Anyone is welcome to attend. Same with the Caregiver Connect program, which meets in person at the Shoreview Community Center here in Minnesota, and also provides respite. If you're interested in either of those, please reach out to me at Lori, L-O-R-I, at alzheimerspeaks.com. And then, of course, don't forget to check out Dementia Map, our global resource directory. And if you're not part of it, you should be. Cost isn't a factor. Anyone who has a service, product, or tool that is supporting dementia and caregivers is welcome. And you can just go to dementiamap.com. If you'd like a tour from me, I would be more than glad to set one up and tell you all about it. There are also paid plans as well if you'd like a little bit more exposure. So let's see who's in the waiting room. Well, welcome, everyone. It's so exciting to see so many smiling faces for open mic. So what we do here is I'm just going to kind of pick and pull people in, and we're going to get updates on what's going on with them, their lived experiences, work that they're doing, theories that they have, areas we need to improve on, wonderful resources, whatever. Everything is a go on open mic. The only thing I ask is that everyone be respectful of one another in terms of conversation there. So I'm going to go to Marilyn first because she is out and about in a cafe, and we don't know what her background's going to be next. So Marilyn, what's going on with you and Mods Awards?
Well, Mods Awards is, I'm first of all, I'd just like to commend you for the work you're doing for Care Partners. It's astonishing. I open your feed every day and think, my goodness. So I'm the director of Mods Awards, and it is our hope to develop resources that will enrich the lives of people who are living with dementia. But today, I wanted to comment on an interview you did a few days ago, whose name, of course, I can't remember or pronounce. But she was talking about you could choose to be a care partner or you could choose to whimper. And when I was beginning this journey with my mother, I was a whimperer. And I saw only the loss, not the person. I heard only the confusion, not the thought. And that all changed when my mother began to paint. And all of a sudden, we were sharing something that was joyous. And it completely changed my trajectory. I was suddenly able to see who was there. And that began 9 years of our working together as care partners. And I finally understood what a care partner was as opposed to a caregiver. And it was the most rewarding thing I have ever done. So I just wanted to say to anyone out there who is a caregiver, who is starting this journey, who is perhaps uncertain that there is someone there, who is uncertain that they can do this, just hop on and enjoy the ride. It is fun. It can be fun. It can be hard. And I was lucky because Mom lived in a really good continuing care facility, which only a small percentage of the people in this country can afford. And I will not be able to afford that. But it was astonishing how much fun we had together. And it was for anyone who can spend the time with their loved one and to see who's there and to ask questions and to share their lives with them, by all means, do it. It's fabulous.
Great advice. Do you want to give a plug for Mods Awards and your catalog that's out?
Yeah, so Mods Awards is an annual program. Every year we give monetary awards for people who are doing wonderful things in the world of dementia to improve the lives of their care partners. And every year we actually print a handbook of innovations. And Lori LeBay, I'm pleased to say, is in that handbook. And that it is available free on our website at modsawards.org. And you can also order one to be sent to you, a printed copy free. And we're about to enter our fifth anniversary, which is pretty amazing. So I encourage everyone to look at Mods Awards. Hopefully you will find something that will make your and your loved one's life better. That's our goal.
And maybe apply next year.
And maybe apply next year. I hope you will.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Marilyn. Appreciate it. I'm going to go down to Craig. And Craig, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
My name is Craig Hanke. I'm from Wisconsin. I was diagnosed in 2014 with Lewy body dementia and Parkinson's. And that has changed since then to now just mild cognitive impairment with Lewy body traits. I'm not sure what that means, but that's what they tell me I have now. So 64 years old, diagnosed at, I think, 54. And at that time, they did the usual spiel that they give everyone. They gave me 8 years to live and said, get your affairs in order, and gave you drugs and sent you on your way.
So was there any particular topic that you wanted to talk about today, Craig?
Just caregiving, basically. My eyes were opened last week to what my wife goes through with me, because my sister, who's my mother's main caregiver, was on a 3-week cruise. So we were tasked with taking care of my mother, and she's 90, going to be 96, and she's just now starting with like Alzheimer's type symptoms. But I witnessed things with her that I was getting frustrated with myself. And the whole time I'm there, I'm thinking, boy, this is what my wife is going through with me. Now I know why she's getting frustrated. So it's teaching me to try to be a little more patient with my wife, because I get upset if she gets upset. So it's a vicious circle, but it was kind of a blessing in disguise witnessing my mom, so I could again see what my wife goes through on a daily basis.
Okay. Well, that is good insight, because a lot of times we kind of get trapped in our own little world and in what we see. And did you tell your wife about that?
We talked a little bit about it, but then I got sick with some kind of a stomach bug, so kind of keeping my distance from her, so I don't want to get her sick before the holidays.
Okay. Well, sounds good. Well, thanks for sharing that. I think it's good to get different perspectives. Laurette, I'm going to go to you next and hear what you are up to.
Hi, everyone. Hey, Lori. Hey, Marilyn, and everyone else I've yet to meet. I've been busy working on this series. I have a series of books that were inspired by my mother-in-law that was living with Lewy body dementia, like Craig. And I was really just new to the process and didn't really know anything at that moment in time about dementia. And as Marilyn was saying, I started to, the big expression now is people are talking about looking for triggers, but looking for glimmers on the converse, which is glimmers of hope and glimmers of light and glimmers of retained ability. So that's where the series started. And I've been working on it since COVID, since I think March of 2019. And now we're in, getting into 5 years. And I've got 40 books that are part of a digital library that is. I took it down because I was wanted to voice enable it so people that really weren't going to be focusing on the text so much could hear the narration and enjoy the art and the literature and inspire some of that, working with art, crafting, working shoulder to shoulder with a loved one and enjoying, again, those types of moments. So that's what I've been doing. I've been working on the series and getting everything voice enabled and making sure that it's all very, very, the interface is very, very simple and that people, that won't be an impediment and people can enjoy it together. So just grateful to be in this company and working to bring the arts and literature in adaptive formats to people who love it and miss it.
And that's just one of the things you're doing, because I read something, you're doing stuff with kids too. So why don't you share about your foundation and getting books into kids' hands?
Well, actually, that is a man named Dennis Dolniak, and he's in Florida. He has a nonprofit called Nana's Books. How we both have the same name for our LLCs, I didn't know that was a possibility, but that's a man named Dennis Dolniak. His wife was a children's librarian, and he has a nonprofit called Nana's Books. And I'm actually in the process of pursuing nonprofit status as well. However, the Nana's Books Foundation is, if anyone's interested, is when you Google Nana's Books or Nana's Book Series, that will come up as well. And I encourage everybody to have a look because Dennis is putting books about, let's say, a parent or a grandparent or a neighbor who is, experiencing Alzheimer's and related dementias to children. It's explaining, all the different books that he's supplying to schools and libraries. He's giving these children a better sense and their schools and their families a better sense of what dementia is about and what it looks like out in the community.
Well, thank you for clarifying that because I thought that was you. So,
Lori, I'm a dervish, but even I can't do that too. I mean, I've been busy, but I'm not, that's not me.
well, and it is amazing the spans of your library and what you have created in such a short period of time. I mean, I highly recommend people go to, and why don't you say the URL just to make sure that I don't say it incorrectly,
Sure.
and
So
check it
it's
out.
nanasbookseries.com.
Well, again, you're doing great things. Do you know how many different books you have
Thank you.
out there right now?
Well, on Amazon, what I'm trying to do is I really no matter what happens with the digital series and going into residential care and all the different innovation incubators and all of that, I never want it to be where a care partner just can't put their hands on a book. I don't want to gatekeep. I want to make sure that, if you're going to go see your mom and your or you're in the ER and, or you're in a restaurant or you just have access to these books. They're very gently priced. They're in, within reach of everyone. So you can get them on Amazon, but you're also going to be able to get them through an app and through the website. You can log on and very simply and they'll be at your fingertips. So they're all voice enabled. I've got lots for men. I've got six books for in Spanish. Just a real variety for people that have different interests. And yeah, so it's a work in progress, Lori, for sure.
Yeah, it's quite beautiful and expansive. From what I love is that they're big 8.5 by 11s with these beautiful, beautiful graphics, and then just a little bit of words. So if you turn the page, you're not going to get lost in a story. Everything is there, and you can use it in so many different ways. Where if a person's still able to read, they can read it and follow it. Somebody can read it to them, or you can just reminisce about the picture and the story as well. And in intergenerational use, I just find them so user friendly. And I'm just so thankful that you created them, because I think it was just a huge big crack in our industry that was missing, to help people connect on a literary level. So thank you. I'm going to go ahead and go down to True. And see, True, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself and let us know if there's anything specific that you wanted to cover?
Full legal name, Truthful Loving Kindness. Dementia symptoms since 1999 in February. Lewy symptoms, and I've got cerebrovascular disease. And actually, I kind of got it crazy. I looked at the calendar and realized that Christmas is next weekend. At any rate, I wondered if we were still having dementia chats on Tuesday, and somehow I got it in my brain that we were doing dementia chats today, since
well, and that's easy enough to do. And for those of you that don't know, Dementia Chats, both True and Craig are part of, and Michael as well. And that is where I facilitate a conversation with the True experts, those actually living with dementia. They pick a topic, and we have really interesting conversations. We do that like on a monthly basis. But yeah, I'm still planning on going ahead. If everyone else is, I was going to check in with the group and see what people wanted to do on that. So, but this one is just open mic, True, and people can bring up any topic. Sometimes you guys are hearing things through chats that, you know, are just hot topics that the rest of the world doesn't know about, or you've had a change in status with your symptoms, or, you know, something with your doctor or family, or all kinds of insights. So is there anything in particular you would like to share with our audience here on Alzheimer Speaks?
Well, I've been searching for better diagnosis for over 20 years, and I think I'm about giving up. My last neurologist kind of threw up his hands and said, "You need another specialist," and I've already been to so many. And I just kind of think, okay, everybody recognizes it's not really mild cognitive impairment, but they really can't find out what it is, because I have such strong variability between my my strong abilities that are left in comparison to the strong disabilities that they just are left with. Don't know what's going on. We know it's not Alzheimer's because of my, what do you call it, in my spine. Where they pull out the juice.
Oh, Spinal Tap?
Yeah. But they don't really know what it is.
Yeah, it's, I know for our dementia chats groups, it's been very frustrating every time somebody in the group gets re-diagnosed. And it's like, what are they talking about? And everyone in the group who isn't a medical professional goes, this is not mild cognitive impairment. And, you know, and they flip and they flop you like you're a dang pancake, you know, and it's absolutely ridiculous. And we need them to be better educated. And to also let families know that sometimes people have multiple diagnoses too. You know, when my mom passed, she had her brain autopsy, or I should say we had her brain autopsy at that time. And, you know, she had Alzheimer's, Lewy body, and Parkinson's is what it showed. We were never were Lewy body and Parkinson's ever mentioned to us at all. So I don't know if that's something that you're considering doing for yourself, but you would probably be a very interesting candidate for the scientists and researchers.
I looked at it and it's pretty darn expensive. Yeah. I don't think it's really an option for me, but the specialist is way downtown. It's going to be way complicated trying to get to it. And it's just another one way downtown, you know, because any of them are 4 hours from us and both ways, you know, so it's an eight hours of travel for every appointment. And so I'm really seriously considering just saying, I don't care what the diagnosis is. Okay. My husband is not for that option, but he's also not for driving in San Francisco. So,
well, it's really sad that there aren't funds for this. You know, if they really want to get to the bottom of what the disease is about, that they're not funding these autopsies, because a lot of families can't afford them, and it is expensive. And that was something that kind of shocked me. I know when we did it as a family as well, I was like, what? But I'm still glad we did it. Yeah, very, very frustrating. So I appreciate you mentioning that and understand, you know, where your husband's coming from and you as well on that. So thank you so much for sharing that. I'm going to go up to Deb. And Deb, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Sure. I am both a care partner to my husband who has behavioral variant frontotemporal dementia, BVFTD. And I am also, I work with an agency, Aging and Disability Resource Center in Alaska, and we're a hub of resources. If we don't have the answer, we find the answer and connect people to those resources available in the outlying areas. Along with that, because of my interest in the dementias, I am a PAC, Deep as Snow, Positive Approach to Care, independent consultant as well. So I came on only because you asked me to this morning, not because I had any particular intent of what to say. But as we started, I thought of the three things and the major steps for me from the very beginning when I realized that he had FTD because of my own personal research. And then, you know, you tell the neurologist and the psychologist that that's what you really think it is. And they say, well, we have to do our assessments first. And so they did agree with me. But as it's gone on, there seems to be maybe a mix. But I have chosen not to continue just constantly putting my husband through the assessments, et cetera, because he didn't handle that well. The first time they had stopped the assessment because he became so agitated. And in fact, he was traumatized because he's of European background, Portugal, and he has olive skin and brown eyes. Well, when he came out of the assessment, he was fair complected and blue eyes. And I understand that is a an effect when you go through something very traumatic. And so it wasn't a horrible experience, but it was a necessary one, and we got through it. But acceptance. Some people don't like that you accept this is what you have. But for me, it was the first step to get my footing on this journey that is very zigzag and upside down. And we know it, for it changes from minute to minute. Sometimes every day is different. But I accepted that this is what we're facing and this is what we're going to do. And with that, I think it lowered their cortisol level, that I was able to think clearly in order to move forward instead of fighting it. The other thing is the ambiguous and preparatory loss that we all experience. You're living with somebody who's not with you, but yet they're with you. They're a living being. They're a live organism. But the personality changes, and you go from having a husband and a friend to just having a man living in your home that you dearly love. So the ambiguous loss can be a very real thing, and I don't minimize it at all, but I found I cannot live there. Again, the phrase that I tell people when they ask the almost impossible question is, how are you? It's very hard to answer, how's Jim? How's your husband? You know, it's because there's no straight arrow with this. And the thought came to me one day, this is my response, and I feel that it encompasses the whole picture. And that is, I'm grieving. I'm sad. I could use a month's rent. Not rent, but maybe so. A month's respite, but altogether I am blessed, and I'm blessed because I'm able, and this is the third thing that I made my purpose of living this journey with him, is to make sure he knows he's cared for and that he is loved. They don't always recognize that, but deep down they seem to know it. And sometimes you get those fleeting, precious moments that the reality surfaces, but it's gone just as quickly as it comes. And you want to grab it and just hold on to it. And, but to help him as much as possible to have pleasant days. And for the most part, I'd have to say our life is pleasant. Like, I forget her name, who spoke first. If in loving, you're not seeking a reward, and that's one of the things I've learned the most through my walk with this, is that I love because I love him. I'm not looking for reward, because if I look for reward, then I get so tangled up that it affects him. And I want him to be as much peace as possible, but he's living with something he can't run from. And sometimes I get the sense that he would like to run from it. And I think the way he does that is by sleeping. And it's not so much sundowning, it's like an escape, I think. And so anyway, that's encapsulates my life in Alaska. And so well, I'm doing well.
I appreciate you sharing those insights. I think they're really helpful. Craig?
I really appreciate what Deborah was saying there. I don't remember saying this, but this past weekend when I had this flu stuff and I had a very high fever, evidently I told my wife something on the order that I wanted her to leave me.
Yeah.
So at first I said, I understand it's till death do you part, sickness and health and all that I promised when we were married, but I said, I want you to leave me because I don't want you to have to put up with all this and have to, pardon This isn't gross, but I said, I don't want you to have to be wiping my butt.
Yeah.
I don't remember saying it. I believe her that I said it, but the way it came out, it was very hurtful to her. She brought it up Sunday morning that I had said that. Where it came from, whether it was something deep inside the brain that worked, or it was like the fever or what, but it kind of made me wonder if there's other things that I'm saying that I don't remember saying that are hurtful as well. So it was, again, eye-opening, but kind of scary at the same time.
Craig, if I could comment to that, Lori, is that okay?
Sure.
If my husband said that to me, and he has said some pretty hurtful things, and I know from listening to Greg O'Brien, I don't know if many of you are familiar with him, a lovely gentleman experiencing Alzheimer's. He recognizes when he blurts things out, you said you forgot, but his heart breaks at the same time because he doesn't want to act like that. And so if Jim were to say something like that, and he said things that aren't like that, but if he did say that, what that would say to me is his heart is breaking and he doesn't want me to have to experience the pain of what he's going through because he knows what it inflicts on me. And I'd say being a care partner to a loved one is a life of forgiving. And sometimes the feeling might not be there to forgive. I'd like to slap him sometimes, but I can't do that because, and we all know why, I don't have to explain that, but I choose to forgive and recognize what it is. Sometimes I just say, well, okay, and I'll walk away. Not sarcastically, but I recognize what I'm dealing with and I know what he knows, but he doesn't talk about it. I'd say that's probably one of the hardest things is having a husband who has FTD and he will not discuss it with me. And so I'm so thankful that I know what I know because of what I do. It helps me to relax. So, Greg, I wouldn't fret yourself over that. I can understand why you may, but she's still with you. And that should say to you, I love you. Yes, it was hurtful, but I forgive you. And I think that for my husband, it brings him comfort knowing that my vows were my vows. I'm not doing it because that's just the structure, that's what we do. I deeply love this man. And as life has gone on, you find out how more deeply you can love, and it passes understanding for me sometimes. I hope that helps. I don't know.
Craig?
Yeah, that helps a lot. Chu knows me. Lori knows me quite well. And Michael, a little bit.
I know you all from watching her recordings.
Oh, okay. What bothers me the most is that I'm a pretty caring, compassionate guy. I'm a church elder, Stephen minister in my church. So they say with some of these, especially frontal temporal dementia, I guess you lose your filters.
Yep.
And you just blurt stuff out. So I'm hoping that's not what's happening here, but when she told me what I said, I was literally shocked that that came out of my mouth. It was like, whoa. But yeah, thank you for your words. It helped it make a lot of sense. More sense.
Good.
And I have to agree with Deb. I think, you know, what I learned, and I lived with my mom who had dementia for 30 years, was that level of unconditional love that you don't even know exists. I mean, you right. hit one level and then there's another level
yeah.
and there's another level. It's kind of amazing. Stan, you had your hand raised.
Oh, yes. I wanted to appreciate the poignant description that Deborah gave of her life as a care partner, caregiver. It was really touching. And the magnitude of your task. I didn't want to say burden, but of what you're going through is a glimpse of that is from you. I really appreciate the way you described it. And then I caught a little bit of TV this morning where Sandra Day O'Connor was being honored. And as people probably know, there's a few facts, three of them. One is that as she's a good example, unfortunately, of how Alzheimer's is a family or dementia is a family disease, and it affects the well people in the family, and that it can affect your career. In 2005, she resigned from the Supreme Court to take care of her husband. And before that, I think, or maybe she had to forgive her husband for taking up with another woman at the memory unit. That's number two. And number three is that she herself died of Alzheimer's and complications from it. So, wow. She was the most powerful political influential person in our country. Excuse me. I say person because I'm just so equal, you know, for women and men. I said, but I meant woman, you know, I don't usually say that. Now we have to, you know, those are three high points. So I just wanted to reflect that and to, on the heels of what you said so pointedly, Deborah.
Thank you. True, did you have a comment that you wanted to make?
Not that I remember.
Okay. I'm gonna jump up to see Tracy.
Since I got invited this morning, I didn't really have anything prepared, so I just want to introduce myself. I am a four-time caregiver for family members. I did my mom and dad and my uncle and my aunt. Everybody had different types of dementia. And so and my father lived with me for a number of years, and as Lori knows. And so when I was going through my journey, he asked me, he got caught up in the system, unfortunately, and it took us several months to get him released to our care. And so after that experience, he asked me, what does it take to be treated like a human being? And from that point on, I made it my mission to find out what that takes. And with his permission, I wrote a book and to give people literally a toolbox so they could just, you know, run their fingers down the table of contents, find the challenge of the day, turn to that page and read whatever it is that they need to do. And I have gotten some really amazing feedback from people that I did not expect. Particularly, I did not expect to hear back from people who are actually actively going through dementia themselves. I only expected to hear from caregivers. And I cannot tell you how powerful that is to me to hear all of you talking about your dementias today and know how these things affect you and how you feel about them. It's an incredibly powerful gift that you have given.
I totally agree. And Tracy's book is amazing. It is I can go into details, but it's oversized. It's easy to read. It's easy to find what you want. And she covers so many different things. And she really helps you figure out even how to stage your home to care better in it. So it isn't just symptoms, but I mean, there are real things that can make big differences that she touches on. And she's just a wonderful, wonderful gal. And she has her own podcast as well. So go ahead and give a plug for that, as well as your book and how they can get that, Tracy.
Oh, okay. So this morning I had a woman named Beth Marie Fahey as my guest. She cared for her mother for a number of years. And so we had a discussion this morning on just what it took to be a caregiver and then how to get your life back afterwards, because there's one of two ways you can go. You could like climb into a hole afterwards, or you can actually just go way overboard and just do too many things because you've been denied so much for so long, and then get into trouble that way too. So the podcast is called, like my book, The Dementia Home Care Show. It's on USA Global TV and radio. You can find it on YouTube. And it's, I have my playlist on there, so you'll be able to find it if you, or if you just Google Tracy Cram Perkins, which I go this way, like, I don't know which I'm pointing, but anyway, where the book is behind me. And yeah, so it's, and then as Laura's mentioning, the book goes from diagnosis to beyond death. It covers emergency situations, knowing when to put, so if somebody has passed, you can put credit watch reports on your loved ones so that nobody steals their identity. Only because I had a family member who had their identity stolen did I realize that this was a problem. And so there's a lot of different things. And there's over 130 different resources. And on my website, which is also my name, I have a resource page that gives you all of those plus the updates. It also includes Lori's dementia map. And her Alzheimer's speaks. And I mean, there's a lot of things in there, from adaptive clothing down to, where to find government resources, how to find lost monies that are stuck in the government. I mean, it's just, anything you could have thought of that you wouldn't have thought of that you might need to know, I tried to throw in there.
Wonderful. Thank you, Tracy. Michael, I'm going to go to you. You emailed me this morning. And why don't you give me an update? But actually, before we go there, I do want to note, you had mentioned with the autopsies, NIH might have some resources. And Lorette had mentioned the Boston University Brain Bank might have some options as well for doing brain autopsies that possibly might at cost or might be cheaper. I know the one here in Minnesota, they just closed down, which just broke my heart with that. And I kind of wonder, like, well, where does all that information go? Are they passing it on? You know, how connected is everybody is another concern too with all of that. So, Michael, I'll go ahead and turn it over to you.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for having me. Yes, Truth. At NIH, they are actually looking for people to give their brains for biopsies after death. And it's no cost to you. They will take your brain if you sign the paperwork, and they'll take care of the transport and everything and get the remains back and all. So I think it's a good method for people such as us to allow the sciences to try to understand what's going on and to help them improve to better understand things. And it sounds like in your particular case, it would be really beneficial. It would help them a lot.
Could you send me a link for how to go about it?
I'll try to research it. There's actually a brain bank. It's at NIH, but I'll try to dig it out, and I'll get it to you within the next couple of days.
Awesome. Thank you, Michael.
Sure. But anyway, yeah, like I said, you know, Lori said, you know, I sent her an email. And the email was for a survey that they were looking for some people in Australia. I won't get into what the survey was about, because I'd like to bring my good friend, Dr. Stanley Terman, involved into this picture. But a little bit about me, I'm a person who's living with dementia. I've been diagnosed since 2008. And I've become an international dementia advocate and connector who's been trying to bring change and awareness and influence all kind of changes, not only here in the U.S., but around the world, to make things better for those with dementia. Along my journey, I had the luxury to meet Dr. Stanley Terman probably somewhere around 10, 11 years ago at a National Alzheimer's Project Act meeting. And at that time, we were talking about, I guess, something that a lot of us don't like to talk about in bioethics, in reference to one wishing to take their lives. But I think it's something that's very important. And it doesn't necessarily mean that if you talk about this, that that's what you want to do. But I think you want to have at least the idea that if you wanted to go down that path, you have that flexibility. This is not for everybody. It's for a small few, but I think at the same time, it's something that should be talked about. And I've been working at this for 10 years, maybe longer, with the help of Dr. Stan and many others trying to bring this to the forefront, but haven't been that successful. So I'll let Dr. Stan speak about this, and then I'll go back to this survey that I was contacted about.
Well, I also want to introduce you all to QBlocks, which is an e-commerce agency for B Corps, which are companies that are verified by B Lab to meet high standards of social and environmental performance. They have been absolutely excellent to deal with. Their transparency and accountability is absolutely exceptional. And they like to work with sustainable and planet-friendly and purpose-driven brands. And I was just thrilled that they worked with me here at Alzheimer Speaks. They have been in business for 18 years, and they serve the globe. They have a team of about 45 people that specialize in things like Shopify, WordPress, Magento, PHP, and they offer specialized e-commerce and digital marketing services, including SEO and paid search conversion optimization, analytics, email marketing, and consulting. I can't say enough good things about this company. I've had a lot of bad experiences, I don't know about you, with tech companies, but they have been, like I said, absolutely amazing to deal with. They have made a very complicated process very easy, and their staff is so kind, so polite, so respectful to work with. And, you know, when I am frustrated and ready to pull my hair out, they just smile and tell me everything's going to be okay. And they really are just on top of the communication, which alleviates so much stress as an owner when you're dealing with tech issues. And you can get a 10% discount working with QBlocks services. Their hourly rates are really reasonable, only $40 to $55 an hour. You can visit them at QBlocks at QBlocks.com, or you can email them at letstalk@QBlocks.com. For that 10% discount, just put Lori, L-O-R-I, in the inquiry form. And again, I don't think you'll be disappointed. I surely haven't been. I can't rave enough about this company. And that's kind of rare these days. So check them out.
Well, thank you, Michael, for inviting me and Lori as well. Good to be here. I started a nonprofit organization called Caring Advocates in 2000. And by the time 2005 came and Terry Schiavo was in the news, I knew that my mission was to try to create a living will and other associated documents that would allow people who have dementia to die in a peaceful and timely way, and which is a huge challenge for a number of reasons. And so I've been working on it for just about two decades. Michael and I actually met in 2012, and I was in the home of Ladislav Volosser, who's at the time I was his house guest and collaborator. And subsequently, I may have stimulated it. He published a paper on a focus group of what I then invented or innovated, which was called natural dying. Now, you have the right to refuse an invasion of your bodily integrity with food and fluid that someone else puts in with their hands, assisted feeding, assisted hydrating. You have a right to refuse that in advance, just like any other medical intervention. And his focus groups in the area of South Florida asked people, what do you think of this? Would you want that for yourself? And that was published. And I kept my distance because, you know, it was very good that it was done, completely separate. Recently, I submitted a paper to a prominent journal, and one of the reviewers said, yeah, that's okay. I call it natural dying. But what are you going to do if the person is suffering, the person has very, very difficult to manage behaviors and so forth, and they can still eat and drink independently? And that led me to create a new term called the dementia gap. The dementia gap is the time between when you still have capacity to voluntarily stop eating and drinking. And if you have capacity, it's premature and you still could enjoy life more. So that's when the beginning of the dementia gap, and the end of the dementia gap is when you finally lose the ability to eat and drink yourself and you become dependent upon someone else's assistance, hand feeding. What do you do in that dementia gap? And I found a way of, I have a way. It took me, there was a patient who was in this situation. I had done her advanced care planning, worked with her 5 years ago when it hadn't occurred to me that this challenge was there. And she was a very interesting patient, and she stimulated me to find a way, and I helped her in that way. And I had some moral kind of rumination subsequently. Did I do the right thing? Was it correct ethically? Clinically, it seemed to be, but morally and ethically, I wasn't so sure. And I went into the literature and I found a huge amount of controversy. And I finally figured out that there was a way of justifying what I did that was actually satisfying to me and to others, maybe. And I would love, Lori, if maybe we can do a focus group sometime on this. Let me show you. Can I share my screen?
Or sure. I think I just have to add that on. There, you should be able to now.
Okay. So, and I don't know if I have time to read all this, but suppose you are, let me do that. Suppose you're in the advanced stage of dementia and you're experiencing exceedingly severe suffering, and that can be caused by observable and non-observable sources. For most people, consciousness has paramount importance, nothing more important. It allows you to express what makes you unique as a human being, which includes your ability to interact with other human beings, expressing yourself, expressing your love, reducing other people's suffering, use your imagination and reasoning to express your opinions, humor, aesthetic appreciation of all the arts and everything else, music and so forth, and to use your freedom to be spiritual and to act in ways that are ethical and moral at best. But the terminal illness, advanced dementia, has vastly diminished, and in many cases, eventually, in the advanced stage, completely destroyed your functioning consciousness. And worse, your consciousness has been replaced by the experience of various types of exceedingly severe suffering. And again, some of this is non-observable. And I have examples if you want. So I want you to answer the following question. The premise is that your process of dying can occur in two ways, and you must choose one. Answering this question, this is like a one-question survey. Answering this question is mandatory for you to continue living, since there are no other legal, peaceful choices, and all less sedating types of treatment for your extreme suffering have been tried, but failed. Choice number A. I want to be consciously aware as I die, even though I have exceedingly severe suffering, so while I will continue living without any treatment or intervention or until something happens. And the most common ways people die, of course, is cardiovascular and infections in advanced dementia. Or B, I do not want to be consciously aware of my exceedingly severe suffering as I die, so I will consent to receive high enough doses of medications that put me into a very deep sleep, which I have coined the new term moderate anesthesia, even though I will likely not wake up before I die. So, I wonder if I can stop sharing the screen and go around the room. And Tracy, is it for you, A or B? Let's say, since we don't, yeah, everyone's on mute. Say A, raise your hand if it's A. Do you want to continue living and not have sedation? Okay. All right. Michael, do you want to continue living or do you want to have sedation?
I would want to have sedation.
You want sedation?
Absolutely.
Okay. Barbara, can you raise your hand if you want, or just take yourself off mute? What would you like, sedation or continue living with suffering?
Sedation. Sedation, yes.
Deborah, what would you like?
Probably A.
A? Continue mm-hmm. living? Okay. Mm-hmm. Even though you have extreme suffering. Okay. Yep. Laurette, what would you want?
This is a tough one. I mean, definitely more toward B, but I think I may want to, consciously decide to check out even before that point.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
If possible.
Yeah. Right. I don't know
how you would do that, but okay. And Craig, what would you want?
Definitely B, but I do have a comment. Well,
please. You wrote. What is your comment, Craig?
I had a question because I not only receive communion at church, but I also give communion as an elder. And I asked my minister one time, I said, what happens when and if I get to the stage where I don't know what communion is, what it means, is that a sin or should I be doing it? And his comment was, I think God knows what's going on. I think he would be forgiving and allow you to continue to take communion even if you don't know what it is or what it means.
I like that comment and I agree with it. And there's a wisdom in the Catholic Church that many wisdoms. And it may also be the case that God would also approve of or forgive or whatever, condone the process of sedation so that you're not aware of exceedingly severe suffering. In any event, Laurie, you can see that there's a difference of opinion. And maybe someday we can focus on this particular subject and flush it out with the people's... most of the people, it wasn't like a slam dunk. Right? For Michael, it was. But for most people, I don't know, sort of, yeah. And that's really... so. We should learn more about this. I may, so perhaps you put this on the future agenda. I wanted to just say that caring advocates helps two kinds of people. They help people who have their full capacity to create a living will, to sign a pulse form, which is a consent for doctor's orders. And all that. That's a capacitated individual doing advanced care planning. I call it strategic advanced care planning. That's its name, and it's on my website, caringadvocates.org. The other program is called Now Care Planning, and that applies to people who have reached the advanced stage of dementia without a living will or without an adequate living will and all the strategies that are needed that I've been developing for the last two decades to make it work. And I published a paper in 2022 where I took the new crop of a dozen dementia specific living wills and I put them through kind of the lens of 24 different flaws, and every single one of them was flawed, leading to either premature or prolonged dying. And this was published in a prominent journal called Biomed Central Biomedical Ethics, one of the top journals in ethics. So living wills generally don't work. And even if you have a living will that does work, and my way cards, I think, work, you still need extra strategies added to it to make it work, for sure. So that's why the strategies come in. Anyway, so there's now care planning is for the people who don't have such a living will. And what we generally do is this. We form what's called a patient decision committee. We find those people who are available, who are very concerned with, very knowledgeable about the person with dementia, so that they know what that person's treatment preferences would be. They know that person's life values, long-term life values. And then they substitute their working brain for that person. And they say, okay, Sally is in this particular situation, condition. Knowing Sally as I do, what would Sally decide for Sally if she could? Or if we asked her 10 years ago, if you're in this condition 10 years from now, what would you want? That's called substituted judgment. And if there is a consensus of substituted judgment, then we can proceed because it's legal to appoint the proxy agent to direct the care with instructions on behalf of the patient. But this is an elaboration. It's not one person making one decision. It's maybe five people making 50 decisions. So you have 250 decisions. You say how many of them line up with enough agreement that you can really grab a hold of this and say, this works. So that's now care planning. How many people need now care planning in the United States? 2 million.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-494-8310. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-494-8310. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-494-8310.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Interesting. I find this a really interesting topic. You know, we did a special on this, which was a two-hour special years back. And I remember at the very end, everyone said, okay, well, Lori, what would you do? Kind of with your one question, two responses, what's it going to be? And one I want to say is nobody wants to make a split decision like we were called to do today. I mean, that was an example for sure. And it's interesting to hear the answers. But my answer I found was interesting because I didn't really know what was going to roll out of my mouth. And my answer was, I'm a girl that likes my choices. And so I definitely like option B. And standing here today, that's what I think that I would choose, is to be able to have that option. But living through, you know, my mom's dementia of 30 years, I also can honestly say I wouldn't have wanted to give up one second of it. And I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today without that journey with her. And I wouldn't have learned the different levels of unconditional love without that journey. I mean, there were so many things, so many blessings that I got through that journey. And I know not everybody does. I was a lucky one that was able to see those things. And so it's really hard because I think if I take that choice, am I taking away from my daughter maybe what she would perceive as blessings? And not that you see those on a day-to-day basis all the time when you're in the midst of caring. But it's a very interesting discussion. I also loved when you pointed out 2 million. I think there's probably a lot more than 2 million out there that need to make this decision. And I believe it's compassionate choices also, and you're probably very familiar with them, Stan, that has what I found one of the best, and I haven't looked at yours, so I can't compare. But they give some really good questions to ask where you can change levels and you can change mixtures with different symptoms in terms of what you want when, instead of so often it's black or white, black or white, black or white. And this disease, I mean, it flips, it flops, it turns, it's, you know, zigs and it zags all over the place in terms of what it looks like, what it feels like to people. And I think that those conversations have to be had. And I think we need people like you bringing this up because you don't want to just fall into this. You know, you want to be able to have some thought about all of this and how does this affect not only the person diagnosed, but their loved ones as well. And are you going to have that team that really knows what you want? Because I've witnessed, and I'm sure others have, where people have been the decision makers who do what they want to do, not necessarily what the person wants done or what they've even expressed. And so, I mean, and that's why we've had some court issues out there as well with all of this. So it's a huge topic. And I would love to do one more thoroughly on this, where maybe we do a 2-hour special and talk about this. And if anyone here wants to be part of that, just, you know, let me know. What I'm going to do is we're going to go ahead and wrap up. I'm going to ask everyone. I didn't get to ask Barbara if you have anything else that you want to say, because I know you were pulled in through Michael and Stan for this conversation and you got a vote, but I want to give you more voice than that before I wrap up.
Well, thank you. I am brand new really to this topic. I've been working with Stan just a short time doing some administrative work and don't have a lot of experience in my family history at all with dementia. And so it is quite an interesting eye-opening subject. And I do have a couple of people around me that I wonder about their condition and people that I love that, you know, that I would at least be involved to some degree in knowing, if not involved directly in their care. So I'm just open to learning and had some eye-opening insight offered by all of you today. And I appreciate being included and being here. So thank you.
Well, thanks for being part. And we're talking about dementia, but, you know, this is a topic that affects a lot of different chronic illnesses or just tragedies that you know, happen instantly. And it's something that we don't feel comfortable talking about. You know, it's up there with taxes and death and divorce and all of those types of things. So I look forward to pulling this show together. I will, in the show notes, add in the four different links and things as well. Thank you. This has just been, a wonderful open mic. We've covered a lot of different things today. And, you know, that's the reason I do these. I'd like to do these almost on a monthly basis. I've been doing them more on a quarterly basis. But that may change for 2024. I'm still in the planning stages, trying to figure out how I'm going to do everything I do right now and add a little bit more on top of that. So thank you, everyone. Anybody have any last minute comments that they'd like to add?
Well, I guess I just want to go back to how this whole thing started. I received an email that came from some people in Australia who was looking to have a survey completed with the meaning of voluntary assisted dying. And they were looking for people from Australia to give feedback. I actually responded to them and I told them I was in the U.S. and we really need to talk about this. Lori's going to put the link in there for anybody out of Australia to be able to reply to this do their survey. I think it's extremely important that people with dementia start talking about this. In fact, not only people with dementia, people who don't also have dementia. You know, Dr. Stan might have mentioned 2 million. He's wrong. Everybody must have one of these because you never know when you're in an accident and God forbid you end up getting dementia. And if you don't have something in writing, you're screwed. So you have to treat this, as far as I'm concerned, just like any other type of will. Because the one big problem you have, if you don't have your wishes written, nobody's going to know what you expect. And it was unfair to put anybody on the spot today and to make them try to think this out. It took me years to think this out. So I don't want anybody to think that this is something you make a decision quickly. There's a lot of knowledge one must learn before you make the decision. And this is not for everybody. But if you want an option, it should be an option. And I think it's a lot harder than what we think we can get, because the laws aren't all there to protect us to do that. And we need to be talking about that too. While Dr. Stan makes it seem very easy, it all depends what circumstances you're in, whether this can be applied or not applied. Okay, if you're in a home or somewhere, you may not be able to have that luxury. So it's extremely important that we all start having dialogue about this, whether we agree on the topic or don't agree on the topic. That's it.
It's not easy. I didn't mean to. It's complicated, and it takes hours to do a really diligent, deliberative advanced directive that would work. Not just a couple of checks here and there, and you sign your name. And I'm aware of the compassion and choices option. It has its benefits. It also has its problems. I critiqued it in my 2022 article, and they took some of my suggestions, I believe. What I meant by 2 million were people who already have advanced dementia and who don't want to continue living in extreme or severe suffering. But you are right. Everyone needs a living will for not only dementia, but you're in an accident like Nancy Kruzan, classically, and you have the vegetative state, or you have a stroke, or you have end-stage liver or kidney disease in your mind. There are other reasons why you need this and kind of a living will that is, I agree, for everyone, not just for the 2 million. The 2 million are a special category who are generally neglected. And the question that you really need to ask is, what would they want? You might feel so enriched by learning how to forgive, by learning how to be a good caregiver or care partner. And it's such a meaningful enrichment and expansion and a growth experience of your life. Wonderful for you. Now, put that aside. What would the patient want? Okay. That patient-centered ethic is really where the moral and ethical decision should be made.
Go ahead, Craig.
The reason I was pretty emphatic about option B was because I watched my dad suffer and linger with not dementia, but cancer for about 8 months. There was no quality of life. He wouldn't have wanted it. He had a DNR order, but still lingered. I don't know why I did it, but I had a DNR order for myself, but when they changed it from Lewy body to just MCI, I took away that order, so it's no longer in action or active or whatever you want to call it. But
it's your choice. Still your choice.
Right. So I may go back and change that after, because I watched several people die, and I'm a retired prison guard, and I had vigils where we sat in on inmates that were passing, and so I witnessed quite a few people passing, and just watching what I saw, I think option B is, to me, is the only option, but that's just my opinion.
Right. Well, again, I want to thank everyone for participating today. I really appreciate your time and your thoughts and your insights. And I can't wait to carry on this conversation and have the next open mic as well. And for those of you listening, please like, click, and share. It's not because I like the numbers. It's because I think other people that you know need this information, and they need to hear the conversations that are happening. And sometimes we don't even know who those people are in our own sphere because they're not comfortable letting us in on what they're dealing with at this, you know, moment in their life. And so the more we can get this just to be a comfortable conversation that people can reach out and grab, I think the easier it's going to be on everyone in the future. So again, thanks so much. Feel free to check out AlzheimerSpeaks.com for all of our free resources. And of course, Dementia Map, our global resource directory as well. Bye now, and everyone have a wonderful holiday season. Talk soon.
It's time to rethink, renew, and reimagine retirement. Hey everybody, Jared Sebesta here, host of Retire Repurposed. Now, this podcast is about the non-financial parts of retirement, which many times can be even more challenging than the financial. We believe retirement is not the end, rather the beginning of what could be the most impactful, purposeful, and fulfilling season of a person's life. So don't retire. Become repurposed. To listen now, search Retire Repurposed on your favorite podcast platform, Senior Resource, or Life Audio.